Thank you for joining me for what promises to be a very special edition of Future Focus Now. My guests are Drs. Whitney McCoy and Antonor Hinton. Dr. Hinton's beginnings started at Winston-Salem State University, where he earned a bachelor's degree in biology and a minor in chemistry. He participated in the Tri Beta Biological Honor Society, STEM Scholars Program, and the Mark U Star Program. Antonor Hinton Jr., PhD, is a Burroughs Wellcome Fund Postdoctoral Enrichment Scholar, E.E. Just Postgraduate Fellow in Life Sciences, and Ford Foundation Fellow at the University of Iowa in the Department of Internal Medicine in the Division of Endocrinology. Dr. Hinton has mentored 39 graduate and undergraduate students who have gone on to achieve or are currently in the process of acquiring a post-baccalaureate certificate, a master's degree, a doctor of philosophy, or a doctor of medicine. From all of these efforts around diversity, Dr. Hinton has been recognized by Forbes magazine as one of the 100 Black cultural makers and thought leaders. This honor has also been featured in the 2020 inaugural year of the digital book celebrating 100 Black culture makers and thought leaders. Notably, Dr. Hinton has recently secured a visiting postdoctoral fellowship appointment at the Mayo Clinic, where he will conduct research in collaboration with the world-renowned cell biologist, Dr. Jeffrey Salisbury. Whitney N. McCoy is a postdoctoral research associate on the Making Engineers Real, Me Real National Science Foundation grant at the University of Virginia. McCoy's research explores identity development for Black girls in educational settings. She draws upon critical race theory, race identity, and self-efficacy to understand experiences in informal engineering programs. Whitney hopes to transform STEM communities and provide equitable access to Black girls and other minoritized students. She's also studied the coping mechanisms of African American faculty, staff, and students who experience microaggressions in college settings. Whitney received her Bachelor of Science in Biology from Winston-Salem State University, where she served as Student Government Association President and was a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated. Upon graduation, she joined Teach for America and earned her Master of Arts in Teaching from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. She has 6 years of experience teaching at the elementary and middle grades level. Her doctorate is from North Carolina State University in teacher education and learning science with a concentration in educational psychology. Prior to her postdoctoral role as a fully funded doctoral student, she was a Southern Regional Education Board doctoral scholar and a recipient of the prestigious National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellowship. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody, please welcome to the house, welcome to Future Focus Now, two of the most acclaimed young graduates of Winston-Salem State University. I don't know how in this short period of time they've accomplished so much, but I am excited to have you on Future Focus Now. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
I have the two of you. I mean, the two of you are like a pair. I mean, you've grown up together. I just found out that you knew each other. You're from the same city. You were born in the same city. You went to the same university. You were in a science program together. That is amazing.
It definitely is.
Tell me about that, Whitney. Tell me about that. How do you know this guy?
So I met AJ in the summer of 2006. Mm-hmm. And I was at Winston. We started in the summer outreach program under Ron Giddings at the time. And through that program, I really didn't want to come to school that summer. I was not excited about it. It's last summer before college, but I met lifelong friends there at Winston. But we came in, had calculus class, a science class, and from there, AJ was one of my study partners in the biology program. for the next 4 years, and he's remained a lifelong friend.
It's amazing. AJ, tell us about it.
So I guess I'll start from kind of multiple things. I mean, I enjoyed the summer outreach program, but I also enjoyed the STEM scholars experience with Ron Giddings because we were a large cohort and we hit the biology department with, you know, a purpose. And it was beautiful to see how so many Black people could work together to accomplish a lot of goals. We're just two people of the individuals that graduated as a cohort that are doing really, really well. There are so many others that are amazing that are already have their PhD or have a doctorate degree. And then we kind of set the stage for some of the individuals behind us that actually just now recently got their MDs or PhDs. So I feel like it was the groundbreaking work. And I felt like always that Whitney would inspire us, especially during the times when there was biochem with Dr. Hart, who's now Dr. Keith, because sometimes, I mean, gosh, the class was just so difficult, but she'd be like, okay, you guys, we're going to get through this. So she was like the inspirational leader that kind of just kept pouring out. And so it was just nice to be around excellence, and it made you want to achieve as well.
So early on, AJ, you saw that leadership potential in her. And when you guys were you there together as first-year students?
Yes, sir, we were.
And you met at first-year students. I mean, when you think back during that year and you look at where you are now, did you have any idea at the time, what was your thinking about what you would look like in 2020?
That's not what I was expecting. I mean, if I'm honest, you know, I'm flabbergasted where I'm at. It's a blessing, and I'm just thankful because of God and the people that he can connect you to. I don't think I'm here alone. I'm here by, you know, the people that were mentoring me at Winston-Salem, such as like Dr. Clark, Ron Giddings, you know, they believed in me. Dr. Hysetta Schuler, she continues to believe in me. You know, we have conversations, and she has conversations with also Dr. McCoy as well. And it's just absolutely amazing to have that continual mentorship and that continual relationship where they're always trying to sharpen you to make you better. They see more inside of you, and then you actually see more of yourself. So for me, Winston-Salem State has been an experience, and it will continue to be an experience as I kind of transition from my postdoc to a faculty position eventually. And I want to be able to pour back into other people's lives. Whitney, do you have anything to say about it?
So Winston for me was just amazing. I ended up turning in an application to go there, and you know, it just ended up working out that I got a scholarship. It wasn't on my list at first. And I definitely, when I was a freshman, I thought I was going to med school. I came in, I was going to med school, and I really felt really bad to change, to decide that I wasn't going to med school anymore. Through my work with Student Government Association, I was, you know, freshman class president all the way to SGA president throughout the 4 years. I just figured out that that wasn't for me anymore. Med school wasn't what I wanted. And through the mentorship of Chancellor Donald Reeves, Dr. Reeves, his wife, at that time, Provost and now President Brenda Allen, Ms. Williams, Dale Williams from Student Activities, Theo Howard, Andrea Thompson, who was my advisor through purchasing, their encouragement and their mentorship really just pushed me towards the PhD. I decided I wanted to go into education first to kind of see what was going on in the K-12 system. And then from there, I knew that I wanted that degree, that last degree that was going to, you know, stress me out a little bit, made me gain a little weight, but it's okay. You know, I'm still here. I'm still standing. And I don't know, it was just those people that really just pushed me forward. But I never would have thought that I was going to be right here. Again, I thought I was going to med school. Then I thought I was going to be a teacher, and I was going to stop at that. So, you know, here I am.
I know. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And when you think about Winston-Salem State and the two of you, certainly being in the science field and the science arena and have gone on to do some amazing things. When people think about Winston-Salem State University, they don't oftentimes think about the sciences. And I know you guys saw my tweet and my Facebook post. I had on my mask and I was in a brand new science building. It's been getting a lot of play on social media. People are excited about that. Now, when the two of you were here, when you were in the science building, you were in the Wilveria Bass Atkins Science Building. Now, I'm going to tell you guys a story then. Will Viria was one of my mentors.
Oh, wow.
Yes, indeed. She was one of my mentors. She was a legend in science. And I'll tell you another story, Antonor. You didn't know, I was also MARC director at one time. MARC U-Star director at North Carolina Central University. So see, we have that science thing in common a little bit. Tell us your thoughts about when you saw the new science building. If you guys have had a chance to see my post, what were your first reactions and your first thoughts about that brand? It is magnificent. I am extending to you an invitation to come, and I will give you a personal tour of that building. Tell me your initial reactions about that.
So I've seen the building on the outside, so from your pictures and in person. Because I stopped in when I was speaking somewhere else, and I just came by to say hey to Dr. Bott and Dr. Schuler, say, hey, how you doing? I'm here. So I always try to do that really quickly if I'm in the area, because I always try to come back. But what's interesting is that this will give us access to more resources from the NIH. The NIH should take us more seriously for the context of not just being an HBCU, but being a powerhouse of bringing science to the forefront. And as you know, with the issue that's going on with COVID-19, it's very critical that we actually have people that are looking like us that care about what we need and what we need in a vaccine, not only just a general population vaccine, but one that's actually going to be able to be helping more individuals that look like us and that are similar to us. And so having the thought process to have more science brought to the institution and more NIH dollars will actually allow for us to create more programs like a career development center, actually not just for the biological sciences that Dr. Schuler has, but the entire science building for chemistry, physics. You know, we can have actual multiple floors working together to create an interdisciplinary atmosphere that actually will ask new questions that we haven't thought about before. And I also hope that the NSF will take us more serious as well, so that we can bring more money in, because it's important that Black scientists and just minority scientists in general are heard and also are able to have access to the best cutting edge dollars possible to be able to do the best science. So we shouldn't just be thought of as a Winston-Salem State, we should be thought as one of the Black Ivy Leagues, you know, and then even from there, trajectory into being one of the major schools that is a reckoning force in science.
See, I knew I wanted to have you on the show. I knew you were going to be great, that you guys were going to be great. So one of the things in terms of science, and so this show and scientists, doctors such as yourself, really give us a chance to tell the Winston-Salem State University story in some very powerful ways. The fact that you guys are so accomplished speaks to the educational experience at WSSU, and not a lot of people know. And the Provost Anthony Graham always says that we're a powerhouse in terms of research. And I hope that you guys will be proud to know that the faculty at Winston-Salem State University this year brought in $28 million in sponsored research. $28 million. We had as a goal $12 million. And so you see that we exceeded that goal. We now have a portfolio of $54 million. And sponsored research. That is unheard of for an institution like Winston-Salem State University. Mm-hmm. But we are positioned to do that because of you and the work that you've done and the spirit that you've taken away from that. Quick reactions when you saw the new science building. Whitney, what'd you think?
I was a little jealous. I'm always looking at the new buildings. When the new student union went up, I was upset, and now with the building, I'm looking at it like those were my dollars that paid for that, and now I want to be able to enjoy that building. But of course, you know, I already graduated, and I can't go back. There's no rewind button. But I'm really impressed by how Winston has grown since 2010. Doesn't even seem like 10 years ago now. And so with that, the building, just like AJ said, it's gonna give our students more opportunities. With those dollars that are rolling in, it really makes me think about the research, the level of research that our students are participating in compared to where we were 10 years ago. When I was at Winston, I was so involved in SGA that I really didn't do a lot of research until I went to other universities. There was also limited opportunities for students to actually participate in research at that time. And now you all have your own research symposium just for the undergraduate students, which is something that we did not have. And so with the building, I saw the state of the art facilities. I'm really excited about how the students will be able to use the labs. And those things were not there when we were there. And so I'm just really excited about what's to come with that. And hoping, you know, one day, you know, me and AJ will be right there with those students, helping those them perform those tasks and, you know, those labs and those experiments to help us further our Black communities in the long run.
Yeah, and it's so important to get involved in research. And AJ, you were talking about that a little bit earlier about the need for to do research that's unique and specific to African Americans. We're talking about, you know, trying to get a vaccine for COVID-19. And so one of the challenges that we know is to get African Americans into clinical trials research. And we have to do a better job with that. Otherwise, we won't know whether the vaccine is appropriate or not. Once you do a very detailed kind of clinical trials, I'm amazed at how people think you can just do a clinical trial. I mean, there's a lot of work involved in that. There's a lot of recruitment involved in that to make sure that you have the various groups represented to make sure that we can see how the vaccine is affecting those groups. I'm interested here right now. Let's transition just a moment because this is a future focus and it's about Winston-Salem State University and all things Winston-Salem State University and beyond. You guys have been really, really extremely successful. What's your recipe for success? Thinking back first year, going through all the things you've been involved in, how would you talk to a student today to tell them in order to be successful, you need to do X, Y, and Z?
Do you want me to go first, Whitney, or you want to go first?
You can go first, AJ.
Okay. So my recipe for success is to make mistakes. That's the very first thing. Have a mentorship group that allows for you to be peer mentored, like how Whitney and I peer mentored each other, but also have colleagues that are also willing to tell you, hey, that's not working. Whitney was one of those that would say, hey, that's not working. You need to come over and do that. Or have you thought about this opportunity, right? So you need that on your team. That's a mentor, a peer mentor, but you also need to be able to have someone that you can go to that is allowed to listen to your mistakes and not judge you, and then actually can brainstorm to push those forward. My person was Dr. Schuler in the department, and then you need a champion, a sponsor. So Dr. Clark was my sponsor in the department. He would challenge me to do things that were very difficult. He had challenged me to go to Duke for a summer program. He was like, apply. And I was like, I can't get into Duke. But if he had never told me that I could get into Duke, I would have never believed that I could have and that I was worth the ability to do that. And then when I went to Duke, he actually came to my summer poster session at the end of the summer, made sure I knew how to present my poster. And from that, so many opportunities happened. But it was started at Winston-Salem State. If I would have never had my mentor to tell me that, hey, you need to be able to do this or you need to be able to do that, then it would have never worked out. And then also, I guess I let a fly into the house. And then also at the same time, I think it's very, very important in the context that we think about where our trajectory is at. You need to think bigger than what you ever could think. So for me, I thought it was just good enough to be able to get a doctorate degree. I never thought that I could be where I'm at now. So I'm readjusting my goals of what I can do. So in the context of like, okay, I can do actually this. So now I'm thinking in the context of like, well, I can be like my cousin, who's a famous NFL coach, who's retired now, and be like him or be better in the context of like money management, in the context of what I can do for the community. I can donate more money. You know, that's what I'm thinking about next. The next trajectory in my life is like, okay, let me get this faculty position. But what else will this lead to? What are the next steps of how I can actually help my people to do well? And then also at the same time, what can I do to better myself and challenge myself to grow? So I think you have to have a growth mindset always, never a fixed mindset. And you also have to be willing to make mistakes and then have people to support you. And most importantly, my family always supported me no matter how many mistakes I made. And my mom and my grandmother would be on the phone praying with me all the time. I'm like, I'm failing this class, it's so hard. And they'd be like, shut up, let's get on our knees and pray. it's going to be fine and get back in the game. So I think those are the things that you need for a recipe of success.
I love that, that the parents pushing you. Was it ever, AJ, a tipping point for you that you can think back and say that moment was the moment that things shifted for me?
Yes. So, oh my gosh. I did another summer program at an institution that will not be named after Duke. And my first summer program at Winston-Salem was excellent, which led to me getting into Duke. But this program, it did not go well. But when I got back to my HBCU, I was speaking to the students. And I remember Greg Ward, before he switched to another school, he's from the Bahamas. He looked at me and he said, "What's wrong?" I was like, "Well, I didn't want to represent my HBCU wrong. I just piled through the experience. It wasn't good. And I was broken." And he told the other people in the department, they loved on me. They made sure I was okay. They helped me get through my imposter syndrome that this other institution was telling me and forcing it on me that I was not going to be able to get a PhD. But what was so interesting was I did the post-bac program. Then I did the PhD program. And during the PhD program, I met the guy that was collaborating with the same guy that I was, I had a problem with in the field. And what was interesting was I never knew that they knew each other. We're just playing tennis. So again, Winston-Salem's coming up because I played tennis back in the day. So just playing tennis to kind of network to make sure I'm okay in the context of grad school so I can get through this stuff. And he was like, "Tell me about your experiences." And I was telling him, and he was like, "Wait a minute, I know that guy." So he made a phone call to him while he was on the plane. He didn't pick up, of course. So then he emails him and then he puts in the writing. He's like, "I just want to let you know how well AJ's doing. I think you should reach out and change your attitude about what you think of him." So for me, again, if it wasn't for my HBCU putting me back together again, I would not be able to handle a Baylor or Iowa or, you know, where I'm going next. So I think that's so important to know who matters in your life and why they matter, not just because of a name, but because of their family. And so I think of Winston-Salem State as a family. I'm always emailing people behind the scenes like, "Hey, I did this and I made sure I mentioned Winston-Salem State. So I'm just letting you know that this is going down like this." So I do that frequently. So it's important.
It's an amazing experience. And I don't know what it is about Winston-Salem State in terms of the close knitness that comes out of students who come here and they support each other. And Whitney, you know, you reached out to me and you said, "You got to get AJ on the show. I mean, he's doing some phenomenal things." And I said, "You are absolutely right. I have to get him." Whitney, talk a little bit about your recipe for success.
So AJ talks about those good people that, you know, mentor you. So I'm not going to go into that. I will say that when you doubt yourself, when you feel like an imposter, which I felt imposter syndrome throughout my PhD program, trying to figure out, you know, am I capable of getting this degree? Am I worthy? You know, can I do this work? When you feel like that, I started to celebrate myself. I had these things called small celebrations throughout my PhD program. And so me and my good friends, one from Winston, one that actually went to Chapel Hill undergrad and then ended up going to Central, so some HBCU grads, we would say, "Hey, I wrote a page today. Let's go and, you know, get Chipotle. You know, I wrote one sentence. You know, let's celebrate this because I stressed out about that one sentence for a long time. You know, it might not seem like something big, but something really small to someone else might be really big to you just in thinking about the successes. And so I really feel like you should celebrate yourself, even if it's not just getting an A in the course. But maybe I brought my F up to a C. You know, I'm making progress." And so really celebrating yourself and knowing that even though you might feel like you're not capable, you need to surround yourself with people that can tell you, "No, you can do this." I applied to grad school 3 times in a row. The first 2 times I got in, but I didn't get funding. The first time I applied to 10 schools and got a bunch of no's. I think I got 1 yes and just didn't get enough money. So out of 10 applications, I got into 1 school. And so just knowing that there are people around you, my line sisters from Winston-Salem State were encouraging me like, "Whitney, you know, just because you didn't get in, apply again the next year." When I was sitting there crying, saying, "You know, I don't think I'm capable of this. I don't think that, you know, I'm prepared to do this. Why am I not getting to these programs? And so I had to go back and rethink, use those networks that I had to reach back out and say, what do I need to do to make myself a better applicant for the next year? I would also say, which is really important, is to have fun. Something that I felt like I lost sight of a lot of times when I was teaching. I was so into my students. I love my kids. But you also have to remember that self-care and making sure that you're taking some time for yourself. So even when you're stressed out, make sure that you find a way to take care of yourself and to have a little fun on your own. That's why I said I love those small celebrations. And then lastly, I would say that people need to use their resources. So I was on Twitter today, and I think today, this week is Black and Neuro Week, right, AJ?
Right, it is.
Yeah, so Blacks and Neuro. And so a lot of things that we didn't have access to back then, Twitter was coming out, it was new, but now you can type in a hashtag for something you're interested in. My old roommate, she is a veterinarian. She graduated from another university, that's an HBCU. And so they had like Black Vet Week. And so you could just type that in and then get connected to people, ask them questions. There's a huge community of people out here doing research and doing things that, you know, our students are interested in. And so I just think that students need to really open up those networks, not just use Instagram to post pictures, but also use Instagram, Twitter, Facebook to connect with people, even LinkedIn, to connect with people that you're interested in or jobs that you're interested in getting later on in your life.
Oh, fantastic. Man, that's great recipes. I'm going to write that down. I'm going to go back and listen to this because this is really important and good stuff. I'm interested in, Whitney, for you particularly, because you happen to be SGA president, and also you were in a variety of leadership roles. And I think when I think about students in Winston-Salem State, and I talk about, you know, leadership being extremely important. Talk about what that did for you in terms of where you are now, how you got through school. What did that experience, what was it like for you? And AJ, I also want you to talk a little bit about leadership as well, because you got some amazing qualities in terms of the stuff that you have done that speaks to leadership. But Whitney, talk a little bit about what that was like.
So I would say at Winston, I don't know, SGA, I never would have thought that I was going to be in SGA the way I was when I first came in. I was freshman class president. I remember meeting Quentin D. Berry at the time, and he was the SGA president at that point. That's my brother. He's a Ram. He's getting the dogs. They're coming in to try to join the conversation.
Don't do it. If he's a Ram, tell him I'm going to get him.
He's a Ram, a former Mr. WSSU, a current teacher right now. So
All right.
So thanks, Corey. But basically, Quentin D. Berry came in and said to me, I feel like you can do some great things with this leadership opportunity. And so I applied to be freshman class president. I won. And over the next 4 years, it's really interesting. I ended up running against Derwin Montgomery 2 times.
Oh, you're the person that he talks about.
I'm the person that Derwin talks about all the time, and me and Derwin are good friends. You didn't know that.
I didn't know. He talks about how he lost, but he never mentions the name.
Yes. So I'm the person that he lost again. I was really sad because I only had like $200 to spend, and Derwin was out there giving out gas cards and Krispy Kreme donuts every day. And I was like, I can't afford this. And his billboards were the size of the buildings, and mine were about, you know, these little 8 by 8.5 by 11, a little bit bigger than that. But through my experience in SGA, I was able to connect with so many people. So many students, and really realized that my calling was to give back to the students. Give me just a second.
Okay. Well, AJ, take over while she's taking care of the dogs.
So in the context, I actually want to comment on that. I think she should run for political office. Yeah. If she beat Derwin. Derwin's already in political situations in a good context. So I really think that she should run for political office.
See, you can't leave, Whitney, because when you left, now we have you running for office. So welcome back.
No, the office, I haven't really thought about that, AJ. I don't know about that.
I think you should.
You know, I do want to be Chancellor of Winston-Salem State at some point.
Well, absolutely. Look, you got it. Look, I will campaign for you.
I will too. Yeah, that'd be great.
But yeah, it was that leadership experience through Winston that really gave me the opportunity to say, giving back to students is what we need. We need more people that look like us in these spaces, at predominantly white institutions, at historically Black institutions. We need people to have more versatile research. A lot of times at Winston, AJ spoke a little bit about it, we were all into going to med school and we didn't realize how versatile research could be. You know, you can research cancer. I research Black girls in engineering and I tie that STEM background to education. There's so many different avenues. And it was through, like I said, networking with other people and talking to them through my leadership experiences that I got through SGA, going through Association of Student Governments and networking with other university students from the other institutions across the state of North Carolina. Just sitting there and, you know, kicking back in at that time, the Thompson Center, you know, so many different students came in talking about their issues, you know, with financial assistance or sitting there talking about housing and, you know, how they wanted their GPA to be a certain amount so they could get to this certain dormitory. All those different experiences kind of really sold me on, I want to live this life in higher ed and I want to really spend this time not just giving back to me and myself and my own research. It wasn't about me. My campaign was, it's all about you. And it's all about you. And I put that WSSU. It's all about WSSU and it's all about you. And so from there, those leadership experiences really sold me on just trying to give back to other people that look like me. And I'm still falling in love with that every day. And, you know, in the long run, I know that, you know, my heart is at Winston.
And you guys did such a great job promoting the university and the work that you do. And you are part of a growing number of millennials, African Americans, who now are in this mentoring space, you know, really mentoring, trying to bring others along. Talk to us a little bit about how you got into that space and how is mentoring that you do different from the mentoring that you received?
So I'll give you an example. I'm in Iowa. And, you know, Iowa does not look like Winston-Salem or the city of Winston-Salem. So one thing that I've done to kind of make it feel more like Winston-Salem is the family aspect. So what I try to do is incorporate nurturing in a way that's different than other people's type of mentorship at the institution. We actually learn to be a family first. We learn how to do career development first so that people can know how to access their resources. Then we worry about the science later, because I always tell them, you can up in lab, I got a project for you. Don't even worry about that, because I got to do the data because it's my own job. But what I care about is actually making sure that you're loved on, you know how to do your coursework, you know how to navigate the system to be able to make it work for you. You are able to have access to understanding how actual networking works and then how to set yourself up with the right decorum to lead and not be behind. An example of that is one of my students who is actually Black. She just recently graduated from the University of Iowa. And she's going to Berkeley for her post-bac. And then after doing her post-bac, she already has a Fulbright that's in Spain, that's working with a researcher that my lab collaborates with now in Dr. Edel Abel's lab. And so that's just one example of one of the students that I've trained. And then in the context that, you know, in case some other people are like, well, man, does he only train Black people? No, I've had two Japanese exchange students that came over. They're in medical school now, for another example. And then I would like to use another HBCU graduate as an example. When I was at Baylor, I mentored this guy. His name was Alex Henderson. He's actually in medical school now, but his journey was not straightforward. It was not the BS degree and then straight to medical school. So sometimes you have the ups and downs when you're looking at research. You have the ups and downs when you're looking at medicine, but you have to keep the goal alive. So mentorship is actually making sure that fire does not die inside of that individual. You have to make sure that they have enough oxygen to make their flame grow. And you have to make it continuously grow, because sometimes people try to put out their flame and they feel defeated. But it's your job to reignite their flame from within your own flame, the potential that you know that they can continue to reach. And so he challenged himself to go ahead and do the master's degree, then do a post-bac for medical, his medical schooling training. And then now he's in medical school and it's his second year and he's loving the life. And, you know, sometimes we have to help our students along the way. You know, maybe it's not a big project, but it's just enough to be able to get your feet wet in the lab and just enough to contribute to a figure so you can get on a paper so that you're ready for that next step. So I feel like sometimes mentoring has to be intentional. Mentorship has to be thoughtful in the context that you have to make a commitment to actually help each individual do well. Something that Whitney and I are a part of at Winston-Salem that was created in the life science department by Dr. Bodden and Dr. Schuler is this program that allows to mentor other students. And so what we're doing is actually sponsoring ourselves as a way to be able to increase Winston-Salem's future graduates network. And so we give them opportunities in whatever they need. So sometimes I'm giving a phone call like, hey, I need this person to get in. So what are we exchanging? So you need me to help you write that grant. You need me to help you do this because I need this student to go here. You know, so it's a little bit of that. You have to really be intentional. And I also learned some of that intentionalness from Whitney and how thoughtful she is. Like, for example, like she was like, hey, you got to have AJ on the show. I'm still learning from her, you know, because she's like, I'm going to get you on the show. I was like, okay, I don't think he might want me on the show. Like, no. Once he sees, he'll want you on the show. So I learned some of that intentional mentorship and leadership from Whitney, you know. So that's what you do at Winston-Salem State. You pay it forward into your peers and then also forward for others to see as an example.
Yeah. You know, that is Whitney. That's classic Whitney. She reached out to me and I got these opportunities at NC State and I'm not getting any students and you need to make sure I get some students. I said, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Can talk a little bit about mentoring.
Got to get our students in there. So with mentorship, it's really interesting. AJ talks about mentoring people at the undergraduate and graduate level. And I always think of myself as someone that is mentoring people at the K through 12 level. It's really interesting because a lot of my students, they were fourth and fifth graders when I was teaching them, and now they are high school students. And a lot of people don't think about these students needing mentors, right? When we're talking about mentorship, we're talking about college. But it starts when students are young. A lot of times, a lot of our research says that, you know, by the time a student finishes the fifth grade, they have already determined who they're going to be. Mm. Now, a lot of times those things can change, right? We can decide if, you know, I want to change my trajectory. I definitely know people that has happened too, but it begins when they're young. And so what I have started to do is those students that I used to teach, you know, they have my cell phone number. They follow me on Instagram. And so they reach out to me for summer opportunities. So for example, our universities have summer opportunities and outreach programs for high school students to participate in research. Some are paid, some are volunteer. They might also have experiences for summer camps. And so one of the things that I've been doing over the last 4 years, especially while I was at NC State, was some of those same students that I taught, I found opportunities for them to actually come to NC State to come to these summer programs. Now, these things cost money, right? But I've been able to network with other people to get their costs and their fees offset. To where they could be able to come at a lower cost or come for free. And so that is where I feel like a lot of times, like AJ said, we're starting to look at these students at undergraduate and the graduate level, but I would also encourage people to also reach back to those high school, those middle school, and even those elementary students and mentor them as well, because they are looking for opportunities. A lot of times when you get to college, people are changing their majors 4 or 5 times. You know I definitely was like, I don't want to do biology anymore. I want to be an education major. But my scholarship said no. And me and my mama talked about that, right? I had to keep my scholarship. And so I found a way to still do Teach for America and win, you know, today. But again, we really need to look at those K through 12 students and mentor them because they need our support too. And there are opportunities out there, but I'll be honest, I didn't even have a lot of those opportunities. They either didn't exist, I wasn't aware of them. And the things that we were aware of, you know, my parents definitely put me in. I remember going and shadowing people at the hospital and going to the morgue and thinking it was cool. Now I don't think it's cool. I'm glad I'm not an MD. Through those experiences, you know, I kind of was on this trajectory to be a medical doctor. And again, we need to make sure that our K-12 students have those experiences. So mentoring those students as well can be very helpful.
Great, fantastic. Want to transition to the work that you guys are doing. Both of you PhDs, I can't say that enough. They're both PhDs. I know they look like they're not old enough to have PhDs, but they are. Talk a little bit now about your research in terms of what it is that you're doing, your research platform, your research voice. You know, what are you doing now in that arena? And
so I'll just go ahead and start in the context. So my research is studying type 2 diabetes, and my previous research was studying hypertension. So the reason I chose those particular areas is because it afflicts my family very much in the context of people that I've loved. I've seen people die from that. So how I actually try to make interventions is actually creating a prescription of sorts by looking at new molecular targets. So we're basically trying to package a new way to create a medicine to treat diabetes or hypertension. So what does that look like in the context of proteins? We study this protein that actually joins mitochondria together. It sits in between. And what's interesting about this particular protein, it acts as glue. So it actually brings the two mitochondria together. And we also study how these mitochondria are separate. And what's interesting is this is the first project. We're basically looking at this, but we look at genes that are, you know, made up of from DNA that actually regulate how these cycling events occur. So we may have one cycling event occur and another cycling event occur, but we actually understand how the fusion events occur at the same time and then how they separate. So that's one project. And we know that when you have type 2 diabetes or cardiovascular disease, these mitochondria circuiting doesn't happen normally. So the dynamics change, meaning that maybe you'll have one mitochondria actually split into two or three or four, and then this one's just left alone not to have a sister or brother to be able to have a family with. So this is one project that we're looking at. And what we found is that we can actually make an intervention to correct that stress that occurs from actually not having DNA express the genes in a proper way to regulate the cycling. And so we're actually using a treatment that's based off of TUCA, which is a antioxidant. So it's kind of like a large eraser that goes in and removes all the ER stress that's in the cell or the stress that's in the cell. And then it allows for the cycling not to occur individually anymore, but back together like it normally does. So that's one project. Then I look at another project about distance. So throwing a football all the way across the field. Imagine that I'm the big mitochondria and I'm throwing away a little mitochondria because it just butted off. But I kind of need assistance to do that. I need that trajectory to be able to know where to throw it. So I actually want to be able to throw it inside the goalpost. So what I actually have is a way to take my arm and actually project it the right way. So my arm, which is holding the ball, is the ER in the cell. So this is the endoplasmic reticulum. And the small mitochondria is budding off. So I'm that large mitochondria. With the arm, I'm pinching off a small mitochondria and I'm throwing it. So I'm actually studying the second project about how the ER pinches off these footballs and throws them to other parts of the cell. So they're rearranging what happens in the context of communication. And what we find is that in type 2 diabetes or cardiovascular disease, the communication to actually throw it laterally in a nice, beautiful spiral is off. So sometimes you might get a left-handed person throwing it right-handed, or you might get a right-handed person throwing it left-handed. So everything's crazy. So now we're trying to actually figure out how we can actually make the cell behave in a proper way. So we haven't quite figured that project out, but we have some thoughts. So that's kind of what I study in a nutshell.
Really, that's a mouthful. And but you know what I like about it, AJ, is that you had my attention, and I was excited, and I wanted to come and work with you and find out about all this stuff. And I can see why students come to you, and I can see how you have been so accomplished you guys, you publish a lot of papers, you have students on your papers, and I think that's a great mentor, and I think that's a great approach to science when you get everybody involved in that. I'm gonna come back to you in just a moment, but let me go to Whitney at this moment. Tell us about your research, doing some exciting stuff that we need to hear about.
So I'm not as far as in the game as AJ is. You know, he's been finished with that PhD for a while now. And so I'm trying to get like him. So he's definitely a motivator of mine, but I just recently defended my dissertation during coronavirus in March, and was one of those May graduates. So May graduates from Winston, I definitely understand how you're feeling. Our day is coming. And so I just wanted to shout those students out because I know that was a lot for them. But currently my research focuses on Black adolescent girls as it pertains to their experiences in engineering education. So what I look at is their gendered racial experiences, what I call intersectionality. So thinking about how their race and their gender influences their identity development in engineering education, thinking about how they form that engineering identity. You know, do I want to be an engineer? Do I see myself as an engineer? And how their STEM self-efficacy, or, you know, that belief that I can do science, I can do mathematics, how all those things come together and influence their overall identity as an individual, to see, you know, do I feel like in the long run, I actually want to be in this space, and do I fit in this space? With that research, I also look at it in predominantly white spaces. And mm-hmm. so what I did for my dissertation research is I looked at summer camps in a certain location. And I looked at how these Black girls were maneuvering these experiences at the middle school level. And through that work, I was able to see a lot of different things that we still see at the collegiate level. But again, this work is really not done at the K-12 level. A lot of times we're looking at Black women. We know that currently only 2% of Black women are scientists and engineers in the actual, you know, field. And so from that, with, you know, 2% is a really small number, right? And so for us to kind of try to increase that number, you know, we need to figure out what's going on at those lower grade levels. And so with my work, I looked at 2 weeks of summer camps where these girls were able to share their own voices with me. That was really important. A lot of times we have people that speak for us, right, as Black women, but I wanted them to share their own experience as Black girls. And a lot of times we devalue what students can say, and more so what Black women can say to us. And so these little girls were able to share with me every day through a voice recorder how they were doing in this summer camp. And so they would share with me, you know, Miss Whitney, or, you know, I told them to call me Whitney. Whitney, you know, I hated that, you know, today I tried to build a airplane and this little boy told me no. And more so, you know, this little boy told me no, and I think it was because I'm Black and I'm a female. It wasn't just because I'm a girl, and it wasn't just because I'm a female. I mean, a girl, and not just because I'm Black. It was both. And so from that work, I was able to see a lot of different things, that not just Black women are silenced and marginalized, but Black girls are silenced and marginalized. And so if I'm silenced and marginalized at the age of 10, do you think that I'm even going to feel like at 19 or 20 that I'm going to major in engineering? Not at all. And so also with that work, I was able to see that a lot of these girls do not like mathematics. You know, some of them love math and a lot of them hate it. They feel like math is not something that they do well. And so we need to look back and see how we're actually teaching and instructing in these middle schools mathematics education. It definitely needs to be looked at a little bit stronger. And then lastly, I looked at the structural systems that exist within these systems. And so I talked a little bit, I mean, you mentioned earlier critical race theory. So I look at critical race theory and trying to look at these power systems that we have in the United States and how that prevents us as a group of Black people from getting ahead. And so with critical race theory, those structures that may be. I looked at this predominantly white institution, and at this school, while they may not mean to, you know, have these different structures that place limits on us, they do. So for example, the program that I looked at, it cost a lot of money and a lot of the girls were receiving financial assistance. If that financial assistance is not there, those girls couldn't participate. And so for example, even this summer, some of the summer programs that were going on were virtual, but because different things were in play, Black girls couldn't participate. And so the numbers, you know, may have gone down because of that. And so even so, like if I see something, I see it's cost $900 and I see it cost $500 for a week of camp, am I going to sign up? Am I going to be encouraged to be in this space? You know, if I sign up and I only see that there's only two of me in that space, do I want to be there? You know, and so if I don't feel like I belong, I don't feel valued because I'm being discouraged because I'm a female and I'm a woman, you know, do I even, like I said, in the long run, want to pursue this degree or pursue this field? And so I'm continuing to do that work, you know, working on, you know, trying to do some other things with that work in the near future. And then along with that, I'm currently working at UVA and looking at how teachers are instructing using digital technologies and engineering by, you know, online platforms at this current time. And what I've also seen is a lot of our educators are afraid to use engineering education. And engineering can easily be intertwined and integrated into other content areas. That's what I love about it. It's hands-on, it's fun, it's creative. But a lot of teachers are unaware of how they can utilize this into their classrooms. And so through that work as well, I was able for the last 4 years to actually teach teachers about how to use engineering effectively so they can teach others and not be afraid to teach their students. Because if most of our teachers, we know most of our teachers are white women, they don't look like our Black and brown students. So if I don't feel comfortable as a teacher, and then my students don't feel comfortable, am I ever going to be able to increase these numbers of girls and women in this field? So yeah, that's the work that I've been doing.
Oh my goodness. I mean, a powerful, powerful work that the two of you have been involved in. This is absolutely amazing. I am glad you had an opportunity to share this with us on Future Focus. Now, Whitney, well, we're going to have to, in the last segment, we're going to have to point to this guy. And because you sent me an article, and I read this article, Forbes 100 Black List has this guy as part of that 100. Man, talk to us about that. What is that? How does that make you feel, man, being listed at 100 top?
I didn't even know that it happened until 2 days after it was published. So somebody told me, they were like, hey, you know that you're on this list. I was like, what list? And then they sent it to me and I was like, oh, I'm in Forbes. So I told my mom first, then I told some of my friends and then I posted it. And then I was like, I'm in Forbes, y'all. It was kind of cool. That was the initial reaction, right? But in the context of the work that I'm doing, I'm trying to challenge the status quo about what a postdoc can do, what an academic and career development instructor could do in the context of reaching out to change the mass message about minorities in STEM. And so what we've been able to do is actually work with Cell Press, which is one of the major three journal publications in all of science. And there's Nature, Cell, and Science. So we're working with Cell, and Cell seems to be actually, I don't want to say it, but they're putting forth the effort to pay it forward always. I guess you can see what I'm saying there. Mm-hmm. They're consistently doing that message in every one of their publications. And they have worked with me to create these lists of Black excellence. So we initially did a list around Black History Month to actually celebrate 100 faculty members that are men and women that are African American in science. And then we brokered a deal where we could do 1,000 more names. So we did a second post around Juneteenth and that came out. And then they were like, well, this was more successful. The first post got 8,100 likes on their Cell blog. And then the second post got 12,000 likes. And so they were like, well, let's just do another list of all 1,000 together. And I was like, sure. So that list will come out in October, but you know me, I always like to ask for more. I've learned from Salem State, you keep asking. So it's just not alone to be in the fight as a Black person. We need our Latinx people to be on board too, so we can all fight together. So I had asked, could, you know, some people that are Hispanic that I know create a Latinx list of 100 names? And they said yes. So this list will come out in September. But you, of course, you know, we're not done. We asked Sale to actually write an article with a myriad of different postdocs around the country about the pipeline, but from undergrad up to career changes going from postdoc to faculty. But there's a second piece. So Whitney, there's a K-12 piece that we just brokered as another part of the deal. So I'd like you to join us on the piece about opinions related to that. So I'm going to shout to you afterward. So you can be on the phone call tomorrow just to look at how the first piece is going. And then when we do the second piece, then you can see. But in the context of that, we've tried to create a narrative around how Black excellence and Brown excellence looks. And from that, other journals have reached out to us. One of the publications that's already come out is about the power of saying no, which is actually teaching minorities how to say no, the right things, and be more cognizant about what they're doing and intentional in their actions. And then actually Winston-Salem State is on that article. So Dr. Shuler's on that article with me. And so in the context of another article that we're calling the Toolkits for Success for Minority Students and like how to mentor them when you're working as an ally, that article will come out in EMBO as well. So continue to look forward to a different article. So this is just one area of the diversity work that we've been focused on and trying to champion for the nation. And it's actually made a lot of national news. What was interesting is that Forbes mentioned the article in the post with Dr. Corbett, who is actually working on the COVID-19 vaccine, which is actually featured in the second round of the individuals. But Forbes had reached out and asked, was it okay to just show my list in the thing? And I said, yes. And they asked me to feature three individuals. So one of the individuals actually is in my Bureau's Welcome cohort, which is Christopher Barnes. And so we featured him along with other individuals as well. And I'm not saying the others, so you can actually go kind of figure out, hey, where's that article at? Go to Forbes and look at it. I didn't mind but the other article, so that you can see that there's so many people that are working together for the message that we're all fighting for, which is just to have a seat, not only at the table, but a seat at what we can create as well for our own table. And so what's fascinating about this is that now this is expanded into more things. I've made a consulting company, and then I've made a joint consulting company with several other individuals. We'll brand it pretty soon, but we already have our first gig, and it's with a major corporation. So when I was saying about trying to get dollars to be able to actually increase the pipeline, I was serious. And then also in the context of what's happening next is that the community of scholars, which is the group that I write with, we're creating a website to demonstrate where all of our posts are coming to. And we're trying to make a consortium of information so that people can actually understand what's going on in the world of diversity. Right now, what's also interesting is that we're interviewing people about their graduate experiences, and we're using that information where we've actually brokered a deal with maybe somebody that actually gives funding to scientists to put out a book about how to mentor individuals, and then also how to mentor postdocs. And then I've used all of this work to actually change how Iowa sees diversity. Iowa has been working with me to create a place that's a safe space for all minorities. And we've actually helped to recruit more, along with my boss, who actually is Jamaican American. He of course had to, you know, sign off to allow for this position to occur. And so he is the chair of the Department of Internal Medicine, which is the largest department on campus. So he's been diversifying faculty at his level. And then he's been charging me to diversify what I can at my level, which is increasing the representation of opportunities for undergrads and graduate students and medical students. So I work in the diversity office as well, in addition to being a postdoc at Iowa and at Mayo. And what we're doing is actually recruiting. So I actually go around the country and give a lot of different career development talks and train faculty and postdocs to be able to mentor students. So some of the places I go are like the University of the Virgin Islands and St. Thomas and St. Croix. And then I've been to the University of Hawaii, Hilo, which is actually every week. And I actually had to cancel today because I was so tired from my interview at Vanderbilt. And but I'll reschedule, you know, to get that last one done. And you know, it went well. And I also enjoyed the context of focusing on how to change how we think about allyship. So I've been creating a program at Iowa where we're actually working on two pieces about how to train people that don't look like us how to give advice to minorities. And then I'm working now with people in Latin America and also the Caribbean to create a piece about the context of how mentors should mentor other minority students, because when we're looking at different cultures, we actually intersect differently. And so these are kind of some of the things that I'm touching on and doing to try to change the face of diversity in the context of everyone that's in STEM. And I don't want to take up all the time. So this is just some of the things that we're doing that I just wanted
to- Just some of the things.
Yes, sir.
There's some just a few of the things that you're doing. Look, I knew this was going to be an amazing future focused show. I knew it was going to, the content was going to be incredible. I knew because the two of you are incredible and you're doing incredible work. I mean, you talk about you met and you started 14 years ago at Winston-Salem State University, and now you're doing some incredible work. I want to thank you for joining us. We're up against the hour. I want to thank you for being my guest tonight. I mean, this has been wonderful. This has really been great. Continue to depart to serve as you have done, and continue to tell the Winston-Salem State University story. Thank you. Definitely. Thank you so much.
Definitely will.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us for Future Focus. We'll be back next week for another edition of Future Focus Now. Thanks for joining us, everyone.